You can see my award-winning climate comedy show Spoilers at a festival near you, provided you live near or are going to McCunclith or Wells comedy festivals. More dates added soon near you, conceivably, who knows what might happen.
And if you are at Mac, come and see ComCom Redacted live at 4 p.m. on the Saturday.
Go to stuartgoldsmith.com and click the very attractive banner image to find out more.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to the show. I'm Stuart Goldsmith. I'm completely full of cold and brick dust once again, so apologies for my sort of clabby, is that a word? For my clabby diction. I'm so excited to bring you this interview with Chris Fleming. He's one of those people I'm absolutely evangelical about. If you've ever spoken to me in person, chances are I've pulled out my phone and insisted that you watch one of his videos. Quite possibly I'm afraid to talk to men or polyamorous. He's got plenty more of that besides, as well as these excellent sort of arrhythmical, I don't know if that's fair. He is musically talented and, we'll talk about this in the interview, but they are, one of the things that I find frustrating about comedy songs is when the chorus repeats all the jokes. He is the opposite of that. It's all just angles and angles and fresh premises and gags and observations to music, but it's kind of ultra contemporary offbeat sort of music. Basically, do yourself a favour, put this on pause and look on YouTube and search I'm Afraid to Talk to Men. He is just wonderful. He's so, so funny. I was lucky enough to see him live at the Montreal Comedy Festival the night before this interview, and he was just sensational, and the fans were absolutely screaming and joining in with the words of all the songs. So do yourself a favour, check out Chris. This is him. I will post-amble at you at the end of this episode, chat to you briefly in the middle. And remember, if you go to comedianscomedian.com/insiders, there are 30 minutes of extra content available exclusively to members of the Insiders Club from this interview. This is Chris Fleming. So I saw your show live. Does that show have a name yet? I know the first tour was Show Pig.
I named it before I wrote it, and just because they needed a name, and I called it a line that I heard in a David Attenborough documentary, or like some of those shows.
Okay.
And it was the phrase, Paradise for a Toad.
That's nice. That's a good title.
Yeah, isn't that good? But it doesn't at all have anything to do with the show. Maybe like really abstractly, you could...
Yes, I think any... Something. Well, your stuff is... I don't know if abstract is the word, but it's very... If there's a theme, the theme is you. Mm-hmm. So I think you can link to any title. You can come up with it, Men at Work. Sure.
Right. No, that's liberating. Yeah, it doesn't matter what it's called. And it's too late to name it now. I think that's the last time I'm going to do it. Well, I'll do it like a couple more times.
Is that right? Is that the end of the life of that show?
Yeah, I started in September of last year. Now I'm writing a new one because I pretty much went to all the markets that will accept me.
So let's... And I should say, I loved it. I went with Deanne Smith.
Yeah, I saw her. Yeah, I met her finally after in the lobby. Yeah.
She knew you were going to do the podcast, and she was like, okay, how can you arrange for me to meet and or marry Chris?
So she's great.
She's superb. She was the one who you accused very early on of cackling like a witch.
No,
she has
okay.
We both have big laughs. Next to hers, mine was dwarfed completely.
It was a sinister. Oh, okay, it sounded like a very sinister French Canadian laugh.
Yeah, it did. It did. It was actually she
was
is Canadian.
Oddly timed.
Yeah. Well, I think that's the thing when comics watch comics. We're laughing at setups. So I love where this is going. You know? Yeah. Instead, the timing's all terrible.
Right.
But we saw the show. Absolutely loved it. You. I feel like you walked out. They screamed, and then you matched that energy. And then everyone stayed there for an hour. It was just an incredible show. Did you enjoy it? Did it feel like a good run out of that show?
Yeah, I was actually talking to Dean about that. I think about how I've learned recently to stop ridiculing. I used to feel strange about that, about people laughing too hard.
Yeah.
And I would ridicule the audience for laughing too hard. And then I realized that then the laughs would get quieter. So I stopped doing that. And I didn't do that. That was one of the first times that I've not really... I did ridicule, like you just said.
Oh, sure,
I did call some people out. But like I... and it did sustain pretty well, those volumes. Because I think in an intimate setting like that, it's okay. But if it's in a huge theater and everyone's just like screaming the whole time, it feels really kind of psychotic.
Yeah.
It doesn't feel right.
What is that scream? That's like you're their champion. Yeah. Like what is that relationship with you and your audience? Because you are someone who, like, you're massively internet famous. Is that fair to say? Millions and millions of views and downloads and stuff.
A lot of I wouldn't personally. I'd let you say that.
You just relax on the show as long while someone else says the word millions.
Yeah.
But that is. So I really felt watching. I felt the relationship with that audience was such that this is a pet theory, which I'm happy to be disavowed of. But I felt like when you make stuff online, your stuff is so specific. Your references are so specific. There is no, you're not working to the, you know, the lowest common denominator. I don't mean lowest, but you know what I mean? You're super specific. Are you on board with this facet of this show, of this person? Mm-hmm. And as a result, when you put that online, it finds its audience and then precisely those people come to see you.
Exactly.
And you are their champion.
And that has kind of like lent itself to me fearing like I have to do like a gala or something that's not my audience. I start to fear performing for not my crowds.
Sure.
Because I've with my crowds, and I especially started off with kind of like a cult kind of following. So it was quite small in the beginning. It was like the same 50 people coming out to every show in every area. And so I had to I could never reuse any material. And so it's been a very kind of cumulative process. My whole, like, anyone who I think comes to see me is pretty familiar with, and maybe I'm this, maybe this is not to sound vain, but like I think they're very familiar with pretty much everything that I do.
Yes.
And so I have to build on top of that, of everything that I've done. And so it's very like we're starting from here.
Yeah.
Instead of for the podcast.
Chris is motioning high up. Thank you.
As opposed to like when I perform for, you know, people who don't know me, it's like, oh God, how do I fill them in on all this sets that I've...
Yes, you've got to kind of inject context into them straight away.
And that's why the people that come see me, I think, are really, really positive and hyped and everything, is because it's like we've had this experience and we can, and here's where we're going to go from there, it kind of feels. And so I think that's, does that answer your question?
Yeah, I think so. I think in the genesis of a comic, to have the same 50 people to entertain... how often would you gig to those crowds? How often would you need to completely...
Like twice a year.
Okay, okay.
Yeah, like I was losing my mind writing new things. And
doing hour-long shows longer?
Well, that was back when I was doing my character, Gale. And I was when we were touring sometimes with the cast even, and we would have to write these new shows. But it was basically just like botched stand-up kind of.
Yeah.
And then I started solo touring, and I would do like once a year. So right now I'm at like a one a year. I have to write a new show of some sort. And then I spilled the best parts online, you know, like the musical parts.
Does it work that way around? Cool. So you make the stuff live, and then you record the YouTube video of the stuff that's working live.
Yeah, I test it out in the live crowds.
Okay.
And then the best things, like the musical pieces or whatever that work really well, then I turn into a video.
Oh, that's interesting, because I discovered you first online, and I think the polyamorous couples song was the first bit. I don't even remember the some sort of YouTube algorithm threw it at me, and I went, yes, please. So I
have... It's not going to age well.
Do you don't think?
No.
It's a very current observation.
Well, I just think that the only people that I've made angry about that are polyamorous dudes, which I'm totally at peace with.
The premise of the premise of the song is that it's never the people that you want to be polyamorous who are polyamorous. Yes. I don't see how anyone could lose their temper at that. I think that's a funny observation. Why do you say it won't age well? Do you think in a kind of a social climate, will, from 30 years from now, we'll look back and go, look at this prick mocking people's liberated choices?
Yes,
really? That had not occurred to me at all.
I think it could be part of my undoing. I don't know, maybe not.
My Undoing is a great show title.
Yeah, that's good.
So I discovered that one.
Our Undoing, that's good too.
Our Undoing is not, and it's also saucy.
Or Let's Undo.
That's good, and it fits on a bag.
Yeah.
What was I saying? Oh, yeah, so I assumed it was that way round. I assumed that you were a YouTube creator mm-hmm. who then was like, oh, I can leverage this by doing live shows.
Oh, no, and it was the other way around.
The other way around, okay.
So I was doing stand-up long before. I turned to YouTube because I was just, like, drowning in L.A. And I started doing – I was doing stand-up for, like like, I started when I was 17, and I was doing it for long before. And then I just took my character, like, Yale was just a character I did in my stand-up. And so I then just turned that into a series because I saw that people were doing, like, things like, little things like that in, like, 2011 or whatever.
Sure.
And so I just did that to try and get things on my, going on my terms because it was, like, and it really felt like a last-ditch effort. Like, I was putting everything in the can and just firing it out because it was so bleak.
The word drowning in stand-up. Talk to me about drowning in stand-up. There'll be people listening to this, I'm sure, who are in that phase at the moment.
Yeah, things were changing. It was, like, there's the old way of making it, being successful in the industry, like, you know, like, you work your way up and, like, you wait for someone, the right person to see you.
Yeah.
But, like, I just had a man. So I got seduced in coming out to L.A. by a manager who saw me perform in Boston. She saw me do stand-up. And then I moved to L.A. and she promptly became a chef.
Oh, God. Talk about specific.
Yeah. And so I was alone in L.A. And, performing, like struggling to do a free show once a month. And, like, I would be so nervous about who was in the crowd in that show that it wouldn't even go that well. And, like, it was just going nowhere.
From some idea of, like, I'm in L.A., there could be someone important
yes.
who could change this, and
yes.
I need never have to do
and
this awful part of it.
And I didn't realize that that was an imaginary concept that was fed to me by, I don't know, baby boomer propaganda or whatever.
Sure,
something
sure.
about the 90s or something. And so then I was like... I met with, there was a manager, so Stephen Wright saw me do a show, and he was like, I want you to meet my manager, and I met with his manager, and he was like, the manager was like, I want you to submit to write for this popular show in America, and I was like, well, I actually have this web series that I'm working on right now that I'm about to launch, I'm really excited about, could we work on that? He's like, no, I need you to do this show, and I was like, so I was like, okay, no, I'm just going to be unrepresented for...
Oh, good for you.
So I just went
because that presumably
rogue.
That is being noticed by someone important. That was the thing you wanted. Was
yeah.
Like big name comics.
And I didn't like where it was going. Right.
Good for you. Good for you. Well, because that need and the kind of LA hunger presumably was that a difficult decision? Did you agonize over it or did you just go?
No, it was in my, it was just, I was like, I feel like this series could do things for me. And they were like, we're not interested in even talking about that. So yeah, no, I it wasn't a difficult decision at all. I went by myself and did that. And everything that I accomplished pretty much was grassroots without any representation until like I needed to get signed like a couple years ago to like just take care of the other stuff.
Where did the belief in that was? So that was Gale.
That was
you
Gale,
were doing
yeah.
so that series, which yeah. I, some of which I've seen, which I enjoyed very much. I
mean, oh, thank you.
Like that, like what 5 seconds in the first joke as she snorts the granola off the counter.
Yeah,
I was like,
yeah,
yep,
yeah.
I'm in.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so, where did the belief in that project? Like, had you already released some online, or was it just that you had the plan, you'd written them?
I didn't release it yet. No, but I just really had a really good feeling about it.
Okay,
I think
because
I'd heard it. Do so well in front of live audiences,
yes.
And then I just had absolute faith in it. I don't know. It was like, you know, the gut. I go off the gut a lot, which I heard George W. Bush also did.
Yeah, okay.
He was very impulsive like that. But that's how I don't really think very much about
okay.
those things. It's just like, oh, this is a feeling that I have. So
okay.
It was one of those. So yeah, I did that, and then so that kind of. So everyone thinks of me as this YouTuber because of that, and I've been very bad at the whole like YouTube. Like I just randomly upload things after I make them or whatever, or if I run them by audiences. And so me trying to get back into stand-up was trying to kind of show that I'm not just one of those. Like
yeah,
yeah.
Because so what's one of those? Define your terms. Like, what were you trying to show that you weren't?
Like there's a stigma, you know, with like a YouTuber. And I've always kind of tried to
sure.
distance myself from that. And so I abandoned the character of Gail, and just with Show Pig, I was trying to kind of prove that I have chops myself. And so there was, that was a stressful process.
Starting from scratch to build Show Pig.
Yeah, right.
So what was stressful?
Because I had stopped doing stand-up during the time that I was doing Gail. I took like 2 years off because it was like this.
So sweet.
Stopping stand-up. It was great. Because you know when you can get in like the loop where you just keep like you on. Back then I was just doing my formula of like writing, and it was like so. Do you ever do that?
How do you mean your formula? What do you
You're
mean?
Like, oh, well, this is how I write jokes, or this is how I do this, or this is how I write a bit. And it's just like you're almost like becoming this. It's like it's not. There's like a there's a ceiling on it because
yes, yeah, absolutely.
And if you don't take a break,
sure. And you are what I find hard is that formula becomes sort of affirmed and confirmed by the people around you in the industry.
Exactly,
the modest degree of success. You're like, I'm paying the rent, and I'm paying the rent, and all my friends are working hard, and like I'm bitching about. This horrific drive I've had to do, and everyone's like, "Yep, that's the thing you got to do."
And when people tell you who you are, that's the worst. When they tell you, when they try to explain who you are, the way you write, what your comedy is.
Go on,
like, because then I internalize that kind of, and then that's limiting. Like I like to not think at all about like my style or whatever. I just like to be completely. Free to explore any ideas that I want to explore. And if you start, I don't, maybe it's a Catholic thing, but as soon, I don't like looking under the hood at all. And representation, like they want you, they want to do that so that they can sell you, which I understand. But whenever I'm a part of that conversation, it's like a bad trip.
Yeah.
I think it's kind of the enemy of writing for me because I try to throw out the formula like I was talking about before, like building on things because I'm so fearful of people being like, that's derivative of something that you did already. And so I'm trying to always throw things out and start from scratch. Of course, it's the same mind, of course, going into it, but I don't like to think about the mechanics of it.
What sorts of things were people telling you that you were?
Okay, character-driven, that like I would do very short setups and then long character pieces. And so I was like, okay, that's what I did stand. And I haven't done that in forever. That I'm a character comic, or that I'm that it's the androgyny that people that people are into, or it's the, just anything, any way that people would describe me, or that I that I'm a physical comic, or anything, any type of thing, you know. Instead of being able to use all of the elements, I feel like it's
incredibly reductive, isn't it? I've got this pet theory, and I talk about this all the time. I've probably mentioned it in the last five episodes because it's really in my head at the moment. That we are all brave once. As comics, we do this incredible act of bravery.
Oh,
and
wow.
And as soon as we step on stage and go, I did it, we close back down and we go, what am I supposed to do next? What do we all do?
Yeah.
What's the? How can I be the same as everyone?
Yeah.
Rather than pursuing, oh, look at the enormous benefit to my soul that came from being incredibly brave that time. I'll continue being incredibly brave. We don't, we go, I did it. Now can I conform
that
in a
act
different
of
way?
Bravery. Wow.
But it sounds like you managed to...
It's like a factory farm. It turns into a...
Yes, it's a voluntary factory farm.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. There's such an illusion of bravery with that. But yeah, it is cowardly.
Yeah. Starting is brave. Yeah. And then, like, I'm sure I've said to people in the past, like, they go, oh, you know, that must be really difficult doing stand-up. And you go, oh, it's difficult to start. But, it's you know, getting keeping going is fine. And listening to that now, that sentiment, I should have been like, oh, yes, that's wrong. It should be terrifying still. I should be going towards something more frightening. But it sounds like you...
Well, with improv, though, what I do like about improvising in stand-up is it does allow for that bravery. Although it's like it's coward, it's still cowardice because I can only do it when they're really behind me. Like at the beginning of that show, like I like to do like... Yeah. I improvised throughout.
It was very loose at the beginning. I really enjoyed how
loose.
No, not at all. No. But I remember thinking, oh, wow, his crowd works phenomenal because you were absolutely...
They were so on top of it and they were so into it. It allowed me to do some... I ended up writing some of that stuff down because some of it ended up being kind of funny in hindsight.
Best way to write. Go on and improvise in front of people who think you're amazing anyway. Huge amount of wind in the sail.
Yeah.
Do that. Record that 10 minutes every time for a tour and that's the next tour. Come on, easy. No more sitting in cafes with a notebook.
Totally. I hate writing by myself.
Mm.
Like I kind of do it crockpot style, and then I like take notes throughout my life and like use accumulatively. But the whole like artist's way thing, like
Discipline, sit down, produce.
Because then you start finding, like, then it turns on this part of my brain that's like, what's funny about chair?
Yeah, totally. I hate it.
Which is a thought I had when I was really desperate once in like 2008. And I was.
I think everyone has to encounter the thought, what's funny about chairs? I mean, is chair like you're inescapably in a chair? I think everyone has to have had that thought, but it's about how you react to that.
It's
thought.
Such an icy memory for me too. Like, I see it now, and I don't know if I'm rewriting it, but I see a chair. You ever see Stranger Things? You know how, like, when they go whenever, like, that girl, like, uses her powers and goes into this, like, almost like an airplane hangar. Like, it's like
completely
this,
black. Yeah, and wet,
like,
floor.
The way I see it is like just like a backlit chair in this never ending warehouse.
Yes.
With a light on it.
Darkness all around. Yes, what's funny about, well, there's just the chair. That's all I have to work with. And I find whenever I have encountered what's funny about this chair moments, I suppose I have. There's been like a big kind of collapse of confidence because you think, well, if I was a proper comedian, I'd be able to come up with a great half hour on chairs.
For me, it's I need to go to bed. For me, it's I need to turn this off because this is a dangerous train of thought. I need to go live some life and get an inspired idea when it happens. That's a big thing too. And maybe what I was talking about with the stigma that at least I feel about YouTubers is that there's this, I think that recklessly releasing content in a world where it's so oversaturated with content. Like, that's why I try to only put things out occasionally that I'm really passionate about and that are really inspired, because I think it's just kind of distasteful to put things out that are not completely from the heart and soul.
Sure.
And that goes, you know, that kind of goes against the whole industry model.
Oh, the ethos is just record every second of your life and constantly upload and stream it, and then we're all an individual 24-hour soap opera.
Yeah. That's not. I don't like that.
I suppose one of the preconceptions I have about YouTubers is that they're going to have a big online following, and then you're going to go and see them live,
and they're going to
suck ass because they've got no actual chance. Live skills,
right?
You've obviously come to it the other way around. So you were doing stand-up. Are there any kind of contemporaries?
And I have no YouTube skills.
And what's right?
And I have no YouTube skills.
Oh, do you not?
I mean, I don't know.
Do you edit it up yourself?
I know I do. In terms of the marketing, I have no.
Oh, I see what you mean.
Yeah.
Yeah. What is the marketing? Someone told me, or I read an article recently about the success of YouTube is all driven by the suggestions bar.
Yeah.
Down the right-hand side. It's all about whether you're in that bar. And if you are, if you're making the right connections, and that's why it's all so horrific and apocalyptic, is because, you watch this guy attacking Nazis? Here's some Nazis you might enjoy.
That's
Do you know
right.
what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I think they're tweaking it now, but only as little as they can.
Yeah, you know? No, it can be ruinous to a person's psyche.
Do you have any understanding of it as a YouTuber? Do
no.
you have any experience of it? Have you ever kind of clocked... Like, it would be good to release things on day X.
I actually have, yeah. There are certain times where, early on I was worried about that. And I was doing weekly things with Gail to try and, because you had to do that back in a certain time.
Everyone was sort of like, it's almost like Stranger Things, isn't it? There's some sort of vortex. And I was like, how must we respond? When is the vortex pleased with us? How can we most correctly worship the vortex in order that we get more visibility?
Yeah. And they would, and the real threat was that they would unsubscribe if you didn't do a weekly thing.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. And that's how I think a lot of these people lose their minds.
And that you have some sort of analytic thing. You can see the numbers drop off. People unsubscribe,
which is scary.
Okay. And can you also on YouTube, is this on YouTube, you can look at the back end of a video and go, oh, that's when they switch off. It's when I started talking about subject X.
I don't look at that. The minutes watched. I don't look
okay,
at that.
Okay.
Yeah, that would hurt too much.
God.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a whole other world to me. I'm hazily aware of all these elements of it.
Yeah.
But so people are producing loads of content.
Yeah.
And so you were saying that you wanted to produce less and make it better.
That's where I'm at now,
Which is kind of a... do you feel like YouTube wants that? Like,
no.
Do you have any idea? Does it just want...
Occasionally, it's very... I don't really... it's such a fickle beast that like they do like promote me occasionally, like random things that I do, and it's okay. always the least expected video. It's very, very strange. And so I just put no thought into that. All I know that I can do is just try and make the best shit that I can make.
Yes.
And then just release it.
And so all of, like, if I think of your, I don't know if they're your most popular ones or if they're just ones that caught my eye or ones that were directed at me through some algorithm that I don't understand and never will. But it, things like the Weirdly Unlikable Guy.
Oh, I love that.
Which is, and it's...
Wildly.
It's,
yeah, yeah,
it's
yeah.
It's such a wildly unlikable guy.
Yeah, yeah.
It is such a brilliant observation that, like all good observations, I'm like, oh, I've had that thought. Like,
yeah, yeah.
I definitely remember meeting people in my life and kind of going... I just can't seem to get on with this guy. Maybe I'm a terrible person. And then someone else will go, oh, no, that guy, he's a dickhead. And you go, oh, yeah, oh, it's not me. Oh, like that. That is a wonderful moment. And that piece of work of yours, that video, kind of really sums that up majestically with loads of detail.
It happened with, for me, I was, the person I make music with was out in LA and we were doing a recording session and I was having a hard time with ideas. So I went on a drive and I saw this guy who I walk by every day and who walks his dog and he just has the worst vibe. And I was like, oh God, like why can't I make it work with him? And then I saw this older man bike by him and just give him this horrible look. And I was like, oh, I wish someone would tell me this. So I wasn't even looking at that as like, that was when the comedian in me left. And I was just like, I want to make a PSA and just like have, like, I wish someone could just have told me this at 11.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And that's interesting. That's a public service announcement for my non-American listeners.
Oh, sorry.
And that's a good generator for material, isn't it? Because I find sometimes, people who can generate great wealths of comedy content are often people with a point to make or an argument to win.
Yeah,
and I think actually the desire to warn is probably quite an interesting level. So this is Chris, and apologies once again. Honestly, listening back to that introductory blurb from me, you can hear me get more bugged up as I'm speaking. I think I start each sentence. I'm not going to go on about it, but look, I apologize. There's nothing I can do about it apart from not release the episode. I'm in an absolute state. So this is Chris, and he's just so lovely. He's so full of energy, knows exactly what he wants, knows exactly what he's setting out to do with comedy. And if you haven't by now, pause this and watch some of his work online. More fool you. He's also got a brilliant YouTube sitcom, character-driven sitcom called Gale, which I highly recommend as well. I heartily recommend it. So 30 minutes of extra content. We're going to talk more after this episode about what it feels like now there are more freaks than bros in comedy. We're going to talk about Chris's incredible beanstalk mantra for self-confidence, get some more insights into the nature of online comedy, and find out what Chris would do if the internet were to one day hypothetically break. He gives a brilliant answer to that. All of that available to supporters of the podcast at comedianscomedian.com/insiders. Now, you can find Chris on YouTube, of course. You can go to facebook.com/ChrisFlemingFleming. You can follow him on Instagram at ChrisFlemingFleming. And you can follow him on Twitter at ChrisFlumming with a U instead of an E. What a lovely man. More from Chris in just a second. Thank you to everyone that came to the tour shows in Tynmouth and Swindon over the weekend. What a treat it was to work with Dom, the new technician at the Tynmouth Pavilions, who was able to throw together in unbelievable time an enormous back wall screen projection of the screen from Primer. Now, obviously, as you know, the tour is the 2018 Edinburgh show end of, but in the second half, I do new material, which I did none of which I did in Edinburgh under the title Primer. I used a screen for the first time and Dom was able to project it on the entire back wall and it looked mighty fine. So hopefully we'll get to do that again. Thanks to everyone in Swindon who made that show so much fun as well. There are more tour dates on the website comedianscomedian.com/tour. Don't miss out on the Bristol show. That one is always enormous. And I hope to see you also in Nottingham and wherever the hell I am. I'm going to cut this chat bit short now because I can't bear to hear. I don't know if it sounds as bad to you out there as it does in my head, but I'm so bunged up and I can only apologise. Let's get back to the brilliant and very scintillating and resonant and totally unbunged up Chris Fleming.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewellery from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight.
Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Your songs are really, they're so enjoyably weird. Yeah. And like they strike me as, and you don't need to tell me if I'm wrong, but they strike me as someone who can make music and sing properly, who has chosen to completely ignore rhythm, you know, not ignore, but like willfully become arrhythmic and
that's a very
stuff, things don't rhyme and
that's, you know, a very generous. It's actually...
I'm doing my best.
The beauty of it is that the guy that is a savant who makes the music, and I am a rancid musician. And so, well, actually, so a lot of the instrumentals I do, like Polyamorous, I did do that music. But Wildly Unlikable Guy, he did the music for. And like he makes incredible music, and then I sing so poorly. And then we like try and auto tune it because I have like so many lyrics that we try and squeeze into each song.
Yes,
and that's why there's no rhyming or rhythm almost. And I kind of like that because like musical comedy for me, like I think it can be like cutesy and like I never like a rhyming joke. I feel like in the 50s they were great, like Tom Lehrer, good on him. But like now I think it's like. To be surprising, don't rhyme. Just let it out.
Yes,
and it's like. It's a little like dissonant. I don't know. I just like that. That also was how I caught my second wind. After I was really tired of writing stand up, was just like doing music. It was like it was the most fun. Just like making these kind of horrible songs.
Were you already musical, or was it like you had just kind of decided to step into that?
All my friends are musicians, and so. I'm not musical, I'll have a keyboard and I use Logic and I just like try and I like took a lot of, I was in band and everything. I played the tuba and whatnot, but like
I'm just putting a pin in tuba. We're coming back to that.
I'm a very bad musician.
Okay.
Yeah. There's no other way to put it.
And something about your songs is that because the word surprise is really key, isn't it? Because you might repeat a chorus, but the chorus is in itself, it's not like a memorable chorus the first time you hear it, so the second time it feels like a surprise. I suppose what I'm trying to say is that sometimes with comedy songs, they can be predictable because someone repeats the chorus and you're like, well, we already know these jokes, you're just saying these jokes again.
Right.
Whereas even though you repeat the chorus on some of your songs, it doesn't have that problem because it is so jangled and dissonant that you're like, is this bit again? Like, you know what I mean? So there is still a journey to go on. There's still something to discover from it.
Yeah.
I meant it positively.
No, I mean that.
So to ram all of those observations in, someone that left a fabulous comment on your YouTube, which is on one of your videos, which was that...
The comments are great.
They are great. Yeah. Do you know how unusual that is?
Why
do they all love you so much?
They're really, really great.
Is there something about the nature of your videos that if someone's going to hate it, they just don't watch it?
You don't get
negative comments?
I've had like almost no hateful stuff. It's crazy.
That is crazy.
I know. I'm very lucky.
It's not luck. What is it? Do you have a theory? What is it? Why aren't people... Is it that...
Women get more hate.
Yeah.
True.
You're a weird man. I wonder if you are wearing your weirdness so proudly as
maybe.
A shield and a lance. You know, it's like, fucking come on then, point out I'm weird. Maybe that's it?
I don't know. I'm just very grateful because I can be leveled.
You can be leveled by comments.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. The first time I got a negative comment was, it was on a British site. It was the Daily Mail.
That will be a punchline to anyone in the UK.
Okay,
it's a horrific right-wing rant.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Does not represent our...
There was one comment that I like had to... I was like bedridden for 10 hours. Not really. I mean, but it was like I had to kind of lie down and just...
Now, given that you obviously remember that comment word for word, because we all do.
Yeah.
Do you remember, can you share us with the... No.
I'm not going to.
Just seal it in lead forever. Totally understandable. Oops.
Okay, I'll tell you.
Go on.
Oh, I'm not going to tell you. Okay, I'll tell you. It was something along the lines of, and I don't know why this got to me. I don't know why it got to me. It was, he should take an improv class.
Oh, that is not what I was expecting at all. He should take an improv class. Oh,
it killed me. It absolutely killed me.
God.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, but what, that would make me angry rather than sad, I think. Why would that kill you?
I don't know.
Because you have taken.
No.
You're a theatre kid, right? You studied theatre.
Oh, yeah.
Some sort of drama. Yeah.
Yeah.
So you must have done improv.
I fancy myself a good improviser.
You are a good improviser. You're an excellent improviser.
Thank you.
So, but you must have a confidence in yourself that you're an excellent improviser.
Yeah, yeah.
This was 2015. Why would that upset you so
much? It was 2015. I don't know.
God, that's fascinating.
Maybe because on YouTube, everything's so over-edited that you can, like, get away with stuff. But then I always felt like I was kind of, I could speak the language of comedy, or that I was fluent in the language of it. And then if someone, like, poked a hole in that idea of myself,
That is very strange.
Yeah.
So that self-image, maybe that hurt you so much because that is your personality. You as a creative, performative comedy person is yourself.
Yeah.
And so for someone to go, this guy should try being a creative comedy person. Yeah. It's like that maybe just gets to the root of like, oh, this guy isn't the self that he thinks he is.
Yeah.
Fuck.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, it really, it was the
I'm sorry to bring that up. You're wiggling your leg now and I can only apologize.
It was the 5-point Paime heart punch or whatever it is. I mean, I was leveled.
God, but that does strike me as strange.
I don't think I've ever spoken about it out loud to anybody.
Yeah, well, I appreciate. Thank you. I appreciate you going there on our behalf.
Yeah.
But that does strike me as strange. Let's talk then a bit about vulnerability, because you are, and again, I feel like I use this as a touchstone. I overuse this on the podcast. Apologies, dear listener.
I like controlled vulnerability.
Okay.
Well, so what were we going to say?
Well, the thing I was going to mention was I am a big fan of the band The Mountain Goats.
I don't know
if you're familiar with John Darnell from The Mountain Goats.
We have the same, very similar Spotify following.
Oh, what? Do you really?
Yeah.
Do you really? That is lovely.
It's like Mitski, Mountain Goats, and me.
Who's the other one? Mitski.
They're on my Spotify. If you like Chris Fleming,
you'll
listen to The Mountain Goats and Mitski.
That's interesting. Who's Mitski?
Mitski's this great... kind of blew up with her new album Nobody, I believe it's called, and it's really, really beautiful.
Is it funny?
It's kind of funny. Yeah, it's very it's quirky vulnerability. It's very serious. Yeah. It's not like me at all.
Because my thing about John Darnell, which I love, and I've met him, and he was such a wonderful, such a lovely man, and his work is just incredible and constant as well. He's chucking out albums every year, you know. What I love about him is I saw him live, and he was dressed in a tweedy jacket with leather elbow patches.
Nice.
And the reason he was cool was because he was being himself 1,000,000%.
Mm-hmm.
And that is inescapably cool. And as someone who I think we all, to some degree, want to be cool, but you can only be cool by accepting what you have.
Yeah.
That's the most zen thing. It's like if you want to, we'll do that Scott Pilgrim thing, if you want to pull the sword of self-acceptance from yourself, then you need to go, I look kind of bland.
You don't look bland.
I think I look bland. I had a review.
You got great hair.
Oh, thanks, mate. I had a review, pre-hair this was. I had a review that said I was blandly handsome. When I say that on stage, it gets a huge laugh, and I'm like, "You were all thinking it." So that really got to me. I don't lose sleep over it, but I do feel like that's one of the things I have to absorb in order to be myself.
Blandly Handsome is like newscaster handsome.
Yeah, I have.
You're better than that.
I have a line which is based on something a friend of mine said to me in a roast. I have a line. I've completely cut and shut this guy's joke. I don't think I even asked. Which is that I look like the guy you get, the guy in the picture that comes free with the picture frame. and that's true. It's funny because it's true, right? All of that kind of gear. I've got some gear about this. And it is. And, you know, how vain am I? Like, oh, the thing that wounds me is the way in which I've had some.
You know, I think if someone insults you, then you can use that line.
Yes.
I think.
Yeah,
I think, thank you.
That's
how I mean. I think if it's an act of violence, then it's yours.
Yeah, and I think
against you.
I think that also has a kind of deeper truth to it, because if someone, it is about appropriating stuff. I think of that in gay culture, where you take the term fag and you take the term queer and you use that as ammunition and you use it as power.
Right.
So there is something about like someone insults you and you're like, thank you, because now I know what you see. And there is a value to that, because now if I say it next time and it gets a laugh, then it's my laugh.
Controlled vulnerability.
Controlled vulnerability.
Yeah.
And I think with you, when you came on stage the other night wearing, from what I remember, was it a blue crushed velvet jacket?
I'm colorblind, so I thought it was purple, but...
Oh, it may be.
Probably right.
Bluish. And kind of a blouse.
Mm-hmm.
Like a black blouse with a...
A pussy bow or something?
Is that what it is?
I think they call it a pussy bow. I hope. Okay. I hope I'm not just saying.
And were they flares?
It was the crushed velvet flares. Yes.
And I only saw the
purple boots.
The purple boots with the stars on them.
Yes.
When you did something acrobatic, and I sort of flash appeared. I was like, of course.
Yes.
That is someone being themselves. 1,000,000%.
Oh, thank you. That's very nice.
Yeah, you know, and I think that's what the.
It takes a while to get there. I used to wear what I thought I should wear on stage, you know?
Which was what? What did you think you should wear?
Like a t-shirt and jeans, you know? And like, you know, what I saw other comics wearing. And
sure.
Then,
oh, what are we all doing? What are we supposed to do? How can I fit into the outsiders?
Yeah, exactly. And then, slowly but surely, I got the confidence to really dress the way I want to dress.
And so they love that. They love that. Because also, I mean, it is rock and roll as well. It looks like, Mick Jagger would have worn that in the 60s,
70s. I've always been way more inspired by rock and roll than anything else.
Yeah. And that's, you know, that really infuses the show, because you are musical as well. I'm so jealous of comics that can be funny and do funny music, because you get to be a rock star and a comic. Does that how it feel? Do you feel like you're embodying that?
Well, less that than it just, I do feel that since releasing music, people have felt a deeper connection to me. It's a different kind of fandom, for lack of a better word.
Yeah, right.
I think that, I've noticed a big shift since doing music.
Yes.
Yeah.
There is an excellent comic in the UK called Tom Parry, who I remember on the podcast years ago said, he does work with a sketch group and as well as solo stuff. And he was saying what the mistake that a lot of comics in the UK make, and we have have you been to the Edinburgh Festival? Have you ever done?
No, I haven't.
No, but you have done the UK, because I remember you had some very funny material about bombing in London. And oh God, we'll get on to the kind of the poetry and the language in a bit. But the phrase that stuck with me for the rest of my life was, I performed that bit in London to a personality-changing silence.
Yes.
Like, oh, God, we were killing ourselves. That, I mean, I know, we all know the personality-changing silence.
Like, my posture is slightly different.
Yeah.
Ever since.
God, it's like I've been in space for 2 years.
Yeah.
So Tom Parry said, the mistake that a lot of comics make is that we want to make them laugh and think. He says, no, you should make them laugh and feel.
Feel, totally. Yeah. Totally, absolutely.
And I think if I do some funny stuff, like if I think of my best stuff at the moment or the stuff I most enjoy, people relate to that stuff in a kind of I didn't realise I felt like that.
Yeah.
But I'm not singing at them. And so they're only ever really thinking, I agree and have had that thought,
yeah.
rather than not even thinking, just having an emotional, oh, me too. Like, yes, this speaks to me.
There is a way to get there without just music. Either through physically portraying something. I think theater can do that.
Yes.
I think you can physically represent a feeling that they've never really put a look to or whatever. I think that, like, even comedic monologues, I think people can, there's a musicality to the best of them, and, mm-hmm. and people can remember them in the way that they remember music too. But I think that the feeling is not only a great way to try and connect with an audience, but a great way to write. I think writing about feelings, I think, is also using that just from a jumping off point, because then you're going to get to their feelings too, the audience's yes. feelings, if you're writing about your feelings. Instead of, like, ideas are great, of course. That's such a great way of putting it. I really like that.
Yeah, it's because it's such a hotline. And that yeah. is another tangent. That makes me think smell is a hotline. I don't think there are any comics working with smell, but there should be. Can you imagine?
Smell is the easiest way to anyone's.
For a live event.
Oh, my God. To be,
if you had 30 smells.
Oh, my God.
And a fan.
I was thinking that if any president ran on the idea of being able to record a smell, then I would back them 100%. It's amazing how we haven't been able to. There's been times where I, like, almost grabbed my phone to try and so I could, like, record a smell and send it to somebody. Like, you know, but you can't. There's no. Yeah. That is really the way to someone's heart. Is
yeah, absolutely.
Aroma.
Yeah,
that's true. That's an underexplored.
Chris Fleming in Aroma Vision.
Yeah,
that would work.
Yeah.
How do you do that? How do you mass market that? You don't. You make it tiny. This mm-hmm. is an experience for one person at mm-hmm. a time. It's a fabulous British comic called Simon Munnery who did a conceptual restaurant.
Ooh.
So it was called La Concepta. And he was the door staff and the waiter and the chef. And it was for 8 people at a time. And he would offer you a choice of dishes, all of which were jokes.
Oh, my God.
Oh, yeah, great.
Wow.
Come to Edinburgh.
Nothing cool like that happens in America. Everyone's just doing the same old shit in America.
Have you done much on TV? Would you be interested in making stuff for TV? Or does TV actually hold no attraction for you because you already have your own thing and you're in charge of it?
Oh, no. I mean, I've acted in things. I've never made a TV show. I'm developing one right now, working on trying to, yeah.
And is that, can you tell us anything about it? Is it a you vehicle? Is it a sketch show?
Well, there's
is it
two. There's one sketch show that we're trying to, but I'm doing something with the guys who make corporate on Comedy Central,
okay.
where it's called, I won't give the name, but
sure.
it's kind of a, where I play the mayor of a utopia.
I love it.
Yeah.
When you settled on that as the pitch, the mayor of a utopia,
yeah.
did you go, it's that, it's this thing? Or is it like, is it,
because
there's you
yeah.
and you are the product, you're the thing and it's your imagination and your world.
That's right.
At what point do you go, do you have a feeling of like, oh, this is the right vehicle. This is like the mayor of a utopia. Mm-hmm. That's who I should be. That's not been done before, and it suits me completely. Did you go through 10 different ideas to get to that?
I usually, no, because I've learned through writing that for me it's less about the idea and it's more about the commitment, how it's pursued. I used to stress a lot about, and I still do, about the idea, the genesis of it. And I don't think that matters as much as what you do with it. So which is kind of a liberating way to write. And so that was just the first thing that came to mind. The name of the show is what came to my head, and then we just kind of went
yeah,
with that.
Okay.
And that was, yeah, that. And we developed it for like 6 months. But like, I think, and that's part of the trusting nature. I think you have to, as tough of a critic as you need to be with yourself, I think it's also really important to trust instincts and just be like, yeah, this is the right idea. And then you develop it and you're like, oh, thank God I committed to that idea.
Yeah.
Instead of worried about making it about basketball. Or it doesn't matter the original. I think the genesis does not matter. I think it's how you.
Last question.
Yeah.
You mentioned freaks earlier on. You mentioned being a freak.
Mm-hmm.
And in the show that I saw here in Montreal, you did that wonderful material about St. Vincent. And
that's my favorite bit.
Oh, God, it was so lovely. It was so... I remember we came out and me and Deanne said the exact phrase to each other, which was, those aren't, you know, all the things that make you a freak, St. Vincent, those aren't... You're not a freak. Those are heavily vetted idiosyncrasies.
Those are... Yes, yes.
God, what a sentence.
Yeah.
So I just wanted to just finish on that idea of a freak. Do you feel like a freak?
Yeah.
Have you always?
Wow. Okay. Okay. I think, okay, this is kind of complicated. I want to be a freak. I have always had a complex where I always thought I was too not freaky. I always thought that people, that I always felt in, like, I always felt like I was too Rob Thomas. You know what I mean? Which is insane. Like, okay. Too mainstream or something.
Sure.
Like, I don't think it's that crazy what I'm doing. I want to be seen as a freak, but I think in my head, I think because people describe me as such that I think of that, but as a freak, and I know that that's how I'm perceived, and I want to be, but I have a hang up about not being freaky enough, I think.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do you have other friends that are more freaky?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Big time. I'm way more put together than all of my friends.
You seem to have a very stable home life.
Very stable.
Like your mum and dad appeared in Gale.
Yeah, very stable.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you think
my life is very stable in general? Yeah, I mean, I can be chaotic, but it's very kind of humdrum.
Yeah. So is it, do you feel you're... Like, what is it that makes, what is it in the genesis of the freak that you aspire to be that you are missing? What would make you more?
Oh, I don't know, man.
Should you have been bullied harder? Is that what exactly is the?
Yeah, you know, I should have. I really should have been. I wasn't.
I don't think either of us are making light of bullying, which we're
based on what I was like, I've been like this pretty much, you know. I was extremely flamboyant, and I should have been swirled around the clock, and I was not. And I think,
why weren't you?
I don't. Oh, you know, I think I've always been very good at understanding my role in society and being empathetic and seeing how I can make people laugh, how I can give people what they need in that moment. And I think providing that service was invaluable to my social success growing up. I think that, yeah, I kind of was able to, I think that just comes down to empathy, I think, or social intelligence, maybe. I don't know.
Is there any element whereby there are people who are freaks who don't want to be the social performer, and that by being a freak who is happy to perform socially, you're kind of Uncle Tomming as a freak?
Right. Yeah, you feel like an illegitimate.
I'll be your freak. Do you know what I mean? Is that where there's somewhere?
Yeah,
it's interesting. Yeah, I've always wanted to be more different and weird than I naturally am.
Yeah, I feel like guilty that I was never a pariah.
Guilty that you were never a pariah. Wow. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, because that would fit with the idea of you.
The narrative that I've built. Yeah, because I think a lot of the people that come are disenfranchised or they feel like that. And I'm like, and they relate to me because I think because I was never a pariah, I have the confidence to be able to talk about.
You're not sat things. In the audience at someone else being the Chris Fleming show. Yeah. You're being him because you have the confidence.
Yeah, yeah. And I think I only have that because of how glorious my upbringing and school life was. Like, it was just beautiful.
Because
I was accepted. I was just, yeah. Like, it was, like, I was shy when I was super young, but I broke out of that very quickly. So yeah, I don't know. I think that could explain.
Yeah, and you're completely a valid champion for the people who want to be you, who want to have your confidence, who want to wear their freakishness on their sleeve.
Yeah.
Sleeves. On their crushed velvet sleeves. you're the champion.
Yeah. Yeah.
Are you happy?
Very happy. Oh yeah. Very, very happy. I mean, the moods can change a lot, you know, with creativity. The gestation period can be very painful before releasing something. I'm very happy, I think, right now. I have a dog.
You got a dog?
Yeah.
What kind of dog? You got a Bichon Frise?
Yeah.
Yes. You only ever call him a Bichon.
Yeah.
And I was like, I think the end of that phrase is Frise, but I don't know much about that.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't even know if she's really...
She's
back in L.A. I don't know if she's even a Bichon. We found her in L.A.
A Bichon... I don't know the French for found. I was going to say a Bichon perdu. That's lost, isn't it? That doesn't work. What else are you doing here in Montreal? Are you doing a gala?
I'm doing the thing, a variety, 10 comics to watch.
Oh, cool. Okay.
I'm named one of those, so I get to do like a little... It's like a cocktail party tonight.
Nice.
And I haven't had a drink in 10 days. So one mojito is going to send me into the Jade Realm. So that should
the
be...
The Jade Realm.
That's what I call it.
That, to me, sounds very much like the Kung Fu Panda franchise. That's my toddler is very into the Kung Fu Panda films.
I didn't realize...
It's a perfect trilogy.
Pandas are incredibly popular with children.
Oh, yeah.
Whenever I hear a family talking, a child is always saying something about pandas.
Yeah, I suppose you're right.
I've heard it like multiple times, like recently.
Yeah.
Maybe it's that. I don't know. What are you doing?
I'm doing a taping. There's a John Doerr.
Oh, I'm doing that.
Gala. Are you doing that one as well?
Yeah, wait.
Oh, I think he's doing more than one. Because my friend Guy Montgomery is here, brilliant comic from New Zealand.
Okay.
Who you might have heard, his biggest claim to fame is that he was the co-creator of a podcast called The Worst Idea of All Time. Did you ever hear about this?
Probably.
Check out The Worst Idea of All Time. Him and Tim Batt, another fabulous comic in New Zealand, they decided to review the same film every Monday for a year, and they chose Grown Ups 2. And so they watched the film every Monday morning for a year, and the podcast is their genuine descent into literal madness.
That sounds like what they do to you in Guantanamo.
Yeah, it really does. Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's the worst idea of all time.
Wow.
So Guy's here, and he's doing John Doerr. I don't know John Doerr.
I don't either.
Yeah, okay.
Oh, he's very funny. I don't know him personally.
Sure, same. So he's doing one of those. Oh, that would be great if we're on the same one. I don't know who else is on.
I'm at 10 o'clock.
Yeah, I'm at 10 o'clock. I don't know if he's on the same night. That would be so great to kick together. Awesome.
Hell yeah.
And awesome.
And do you get nervous for those? I get nervous for tapings.
Yes.
I hate when there's a camera for stand-up.
Yes, I'm the same. I don't have a huge amount. I've done, like I said, three, four, five bits of stand-up on TV.
But you got that lilac.
Yeah, I've got the lilac shacket, so it's going to be fine as long as I'm not following you in whatever the fuck you're wearing. I'm going to come out with, hello, it's just a mere lilac shacket. Sorry, everyone. Yeah, oh, man, I hope that's the same one. That'd be great.
They could be irritated, though, by what I'm wearing, because these are not my fans.
True story. Yes, I think that might have been the thing I was going to ask you about earlier on. I noticed you did my friend Tom Ballard's show in Australia.
Yeah.
So this, how was that? Because I watched that clip and I thought you did great, but I thought Chris is not happy.
No, I wasn't. I wasn't unhappy, but it was. I had just performed for a bunch of my Australian fans.
Yeah.
And they were so good. And then I do this little show and they're like, or no, it was a big show. Sorry. It's awesome.
Huge show, Tom. Huge show.
Yeah. And I mean, it was a cold studio crowd. And they were like, you know.
Where's your proper stand-up? Where's your intro? Yeah. And then you started doing jokes of that bit about the mic stand and like what I was told in comedy college was to do this. And they were like, you don't respect this at all.
Yeah, I don't. Yeah. And I wedged myself in between one of the set pieces before coming out. Yeah, I don't know. It was fine. Really, really sweet guy though.
Yeah, he's lovely.
Tom. Yeah. That show also was in its last week.
Oh, was it?
Yeah, when I did it.
Okay. Okay. Oh, I didn't realize that. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is interesting. like, I feel good about the taping. I'm excited to do it. I did one here about 4 years ago, which did not go as well as I wanted it to.
They never do.
Well, I didn't know that. It was my first one.
Yeah.
So when I didn't, like, my first two jokes didn't really get anything like what I was, you know, my confident big, hey, this is, oh, I think if I'd gone in going, this is going to go badly because they always do,
yes,
I'd have stayed cooler. As it is, I was just rattled. I was like, oh,
whenever you need them to be good, they're never good.
Yeah. Yeah, it's frustrating because I burnt. Not like millions of people have seen it, but, you know, I did some really, like, oh, that was my absolute favourite bit at the time.
Oh, yeah.
And I was a bit really well in the warm-up in some horrible...
God. Oh, if you do
small
your
small room.
Oh God!
Yeah, I was like, oh, this is a bit of TV. I'm arriving. This is my first Montreal. Something I've dreamt about performing here since I was like 14 or something.
Yeah,
and I didn't realize it was going to be hard. And the host brought me on with a joke that sort of knocked me. Do you know what I mean? It was like a joke about me. I was like, oh, so I'm walking on going, what the great. Do you know what I mean?
That's
so now,
shitty.
Now I'm ready. Now I'm like, well, A, it's going to go online and it's not going to set the world on fire.
Yeah.
It's going to get seen here.
Yeah.
Actually, the joy of this is the joy of performing in a room and having a fun life experience. And I'm excited about the stuff I'm going to say. Mm-hmm. And I believe in the stuff.
Yeah.
And now I feel very happy about doing it.
So that's it.
It's on my terms.
That's it. Yes. Yes. It's got to be. If you're going to bomb, you got to bomb on your own terms.
I'm not going to bomb, Chris.
Oh, sorry. No, right. Sorry, you're not going to bomb. But if we do, it's okay.
It's
if
okay.
We do it, as long as you're not pandering when you're bombing, it's a victory.
Yes.
But it's hard not to.
Dear the listener, I just pointed at Chris very hard.
But it's, as a stand-up, it's so hard to not feel that pander instinct. Oh, yeah. Even a little bit, to be like, oh, I need to make fun of myself more.
Yes, I do. I am guilty of that in the past. Historically, I have been guilty of that.
Me too.
But although, what's the phrase? I have negative, but I am positive.
Yes.
I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, we're going to have fun.
Thanks, Chris.
Thank you so much for having me.
So that was Chris. What a joy. You can continue this conversation. You can hear more about his feelings on his contemporaries from the early days and what it feels like now that comedy is full of weirdos, more full of weirdos than it is full of bros. We can find out also his mantra for self-confidence, which I'm really glad I kind of nudged him, sort of pushed him to flesh out. And also hear lots more stuff about the nature of online comedy and where it's going and whether or not we should all be scared of memes. We as comedians should be scared of memes. I think we probably should. All of that at comedianscomedia.com/insiders. I hope you'll sign up. And if you are one of the people who is lucky enough to activate the secret hidden welcome message part of that, then I look forward to welcoming you in due course. So that is that. I don't know if I should do a post-amble. I've got stuff to say, but I can't bear to listen to my horrible bunged-up voice. Yes, it's come to this. Remember, comedianscomedian.com/tour to grab all of my tour dates. And Chris is on tour, but it's in America. So if you're listening over there, then you can presumably see him somewhere. Check him out on YouTube or Facebook. Facebook.com/ChrisFlemingFleming to find out where he is near you. His new tour is called Boba Every Day. And he's an American and probably knows what boba is. I think it's a type of tea. And it feels very much in keeping with his character from what I know. But I literally don't know anything more about it than that. I will post-amble at you very briefly, but it'll be awful, just after this horse noise. So in the meantime, thank you for listening and look forward to more episodes next week. We've got some lovely ones. I'm starting to rebook up to get some more acts on the go before Christmas. And we've still got Greg Turkington, a.k.a. Neil Hamburger, Matt Besser and Carl Hutchinson to go. So lots more coming up soon in the internet programme. Good day. Okay, so post-amble-wise, I might save this. I might not do this one. I have made an observation, you know, a little kind of revelation, such as I have, revelations per day. And I sort of realised that I don't know if I should save it until I'm slightly more audible, but here it is anyway. I'll just splurge it. I feel like, and you know if you've been listening to this, I'm undergoing a slight, I'm not going to call it a backslide. You know, I've had a very, very happy first 6 months of this year. And although lots of great happy stuff is happening, and I don't wish to do that down at all, I don't wish or indeed wish to do that down at all.
I am just, you know, I'm finding it a bit hard at the moment, and I'm not going to bang on about it. But, you know, it's a roller coaster, isn't it? Life and mental health and everything. And I reserve the right to be sick every so often. That, of course, being the end of the roller coaster analogy, and not anything more worrying. But I, you know, I'm on sort of a slight downward swing of whatever the fictional contraption is that I've just invented to metaphorize my mental health. But I'm wondering if part of that is due to, or manifests as, probably it's let's talk about manifestation. I think it's, I think at the moment, one of the manifestations of my state of mind, this is partly what I'm writing or have been writing about in Primer, so that's also, maybe I'm not on a backslide or a downswing. Maybe I just spent a month talking about trauma and that has got, that's resonated beyond the festival. I just feel like I go into everything assuming there's an opportunity. Like, I go into everything as if there's an opportunity to fuck it up. Do you do this? This must be universal, surely, but there must be. I think there are people walking among us, rare people who just naturally have tip-top mental health. When you listen to the Carl Hutchinson episode, you're going to grind your teeth with rage at how bloody happy he is. He's so funny. He's such a strong comic. Really lovely guy. And at one point in the interview, and I'm sorry to spoil any upcoming content, but I try and press him on his mental health. And he goes, no, mate, I'm just buzzing. And he just gets a sense, oh, you are. You always are. So there are random weirdos like that. But I think for the vast majority of us, here's the point I'm trying to make. I keep catching myself going into situations as if, like, preparing for them to go wrong. Do you know what I mean? Like, a particular guest that I want to book for this podcast, and I haven't even approached them. I've been trying not to talk about it because it's podcast related, but come on, it's the internet. I might as well tell you all my secrets. I won't tell you who, but there's someone who I really want to approach, and I just caught myself not approaching them because they might say no. Do you know what I mean? Not that there's any, like, they probably would say no. It doesn't matter. And no doesn't hurt. It's not like, this is my point. So much of our mental health is to do with decisions we don't take. This is me on my completely untrained soapbox. It's not about necessarily, sometimes it is about thinking to yourself, God, I'm rubbish, I can't do this, I can't cope. Sometimes it's about that. Sometimes it's just about sneakily avoiding situations in which you will need to confront whether or not you can cope. Do you know what I mean? And I think that's as much a part of people's mental health journey as anything else, isn't it? Like, you still, like, if your life is a map and you just naturally never go near the river, then you end up a life with no water in it. is that clear? Do you know what I mean? Like, it's one thing, right, here's another analogy. You've got your map in front of you, and every time you go off the edge of the map, it's uncharted territory, and then you make a new map. I'm talking about life. But if every time you hear water, you just naturally, without making a big deal of it, are slightly inclined to steer away from that, then you'll go your whole life without ever finding the stream. What is this? D&D mental health for twats. Oh, God, I'm embarrassing myself. I think if you've bothered to stay with me this long, you get the point I'm trying to make in my horrific nasal fashion. It's sometimes not about saying to yourself, oh, God, I can't cope with this, I'm running away. It's just catching yourself fulfilling certain programming and just veering away from something. Maybe I just won't make that phone call. Maybe I won't, I need to talk to my management about something. Maybe I'll just not do that. And exercise, that's another example. I keep not bloody exercising. And the way you end up a tired little wheezy old man who never exercised is just every day, just come up with a little way to get distracted by something else. I mean, I could go for a run now, but oh no, actually I must do my receipts. I must do that. And that compressed, it's like compound interest over it, compressed over the course of a life. You end up a tired little wheezy elderly person who never actually bloody went for a run. Well, my point is that I keep noticing myself doing that. The end. That'll do for now. I mean, that's a point, right? That's content, isn't it? There we go. Enjoy your content. If
and I've got no data on this. I believe the data is accessible, but I've never accessed it. If you are someone who, I've no idea how many of you listen to these, and it may be that there's just one, you, and everyone else has veered away from them every day. Oh, can I hear a stream tinkling? No, it must be the sound of Goldsmith about to post Apple. I think I'll just, not today. I'll go do my receipts. Speaking of which, I'm going to go do my receipts. Bye for now.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.